Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 8, Questions by King Parikshit, Text 22. Yovanusayinam sarga.
Yovanusayinam sarga.
Vashandasya cha sambhava.
Vashandasya cha sambhava.
Atmano bhanda mukshau cha.
Atmano bhanda mukshau cha.
Yavasthanam sarupata.
Yavasthanam sarupata.
Yaha.
All those.
Va.
Either.
Anushayinam.
Anushayinam.
Merge into the body of the Lord.
Sarga,
creation. Pasandasya, of the infidels. Cha,
and.
Sambhava, appearance. Atmana, of living beings. Banda, conditioned. Moksha, being liberated. Cha,
also.
Yavasthanam, being situated. Svarupata, in an unconditioned state. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Please also explain how, merged in the body of the Lord, living beings are created, and how the infidels appear in the world. Also, please explain how the unconditioned living entities exist. Responsively, please also explain how, merged in the body of the Lord,
living beings are created,
and how the infidels appear in the world.
Also, please explain
how the unconditioned living entities exist. Purport. The progressive devotee of the Lord must inquire from the bona fide spiritual master how living entities merge in the body of the Lord, again come back at the time of creation. There are two kinds of living entities. There are the ever-liberated, unconditioned living beings, as well as the ever-conditioned living beings. Of the ever-conditioned living beings, there are two divisions. There are the faithful and the infidels. Of the faithful, there are again two divisions, namely the devotees and the mental speculators. The mental speculators desire to merge into the existence of the Lord or to become one with the Lord, whereas the devotee of the Lord desire to keep separate identities and constantly engage in the service of the Lord. The devotees who are not fully purified, as well as the empiric philosophers, become conditioned again during the next creation for further purification. Such conditioned souls become liberated by further progress of devotional service to the Lord. Maharaj Parikshit asked all these questions from the bona fide spiritual master in order to become fully equipped in the science of God. Om Agyana Timirandasya Yananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stafitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kuramayam Vidajisa Parantikam Pancha Kalpa Thruvischa Kripa Sindhubya Evacha Patitanam Pravanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we're still continuing with questions by King Parikshit to his spiritual master Sukadev Goswami. So the entire Bhagavatam is filled with questions and answers. Arjuna similarly asks Krishna as well so many questions and answers pertaining to how to become liberated from material existence. So this whole procedure of the devotee or the disciple asking questions to the qualified guru is something that is not new, and it's been happening. Even in our chain of disciplic succession, we can see the importance of asking questions so that things get clarified and there's no room for speculation. So previously we've been hearing questions pertaining to the Lord's different potencies, different transcendentalists, the mystic yogis, previously there were verses speaking about what their destinations are, or questions about what their destinations are, how they get rid of their subtle or astral body, and how they actually attain all these mystic perfections. So these questions get answered gradually in the purpose by Srila Prabhupada, and later on Lord Brahma will ask these questions again in the next chapter. There's a few similar questions that he will be asking pertaining to the potencies of Krishna. So the first point that comes out here is, of course, this whole discussion about how the living entity is created and how it the end he's merged into the body of the Lord. I remember in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna speaks to Arjuna, explaining to him a basic principle of spiritual, of Krishna consciousness, about how we are never created at any point. We will continue to exist in the future. So in the second chapter, just the contents of the Gita summarized. Krishna speaks, na tvam eva ham jatunasham, na tvam neme janadipaha, na chaiva na pavishyama, sarve vayam atam param. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So this is the first premise, that we understand that we are the living entity, the spiritual spark or the Jivatma is eternally existing. We are not created at any particular time. We are parts and parcel of the Supreme Whole, the eternal, ever-youthful Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we appear in the material world, facilitated by the material energy, by gaining different types of bodies with different mentalities, different eyes, different nose, different everything to suit our desires. But we never lose our identity. We never lose our individuality. Srila Prabhupada, in this verse 2.12 in the Bhagavad Gita, in the purport, he explains, nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yovidadati kaman, that the Supreme Krishna is the maintainer of all living entities, in terms of their different situations according to their work and their reaction. So Krishna is the chief amongst all living entities, and he is the provider for all these living entities. So whether it's through the external energy or through the internal energy, Lord Krishna is providing everything, just as we heard in the previous verses. And in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear, I think it's chapter 15, the mystic potencies explained how actually even the, specifically the primary mystic potencies, anima, lagma, mahima, prapti, the eight primary mystic potencies are particularly given by Krishna's own internal pleasure potency. And only those who perform mystic yoga, having a fixed meditation or fixing their mind on Vishnu, can actually get the full potencies of these mystic powers. However, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that when yogis do not fix their mind on the Supreme, the so-called potencies they have is nothing but a reflection of Maya. It is an illusion. So sometimes we might see different personalities have some kind of city or some kind of control over certain aspects in a minor way. The Acharya explains that this is just an illusion. It is a reflection of the real potency. Because they're not fixing their mind on Krishna and they're not performing these mechanical yoga feats with a mind fixed on Krishna, then everything becomes a product of Maya or illusion. So that is explained in the 11th canto. So even for the mystic yogis to attain the mystic perfections, whether it's controlling the different modes of material nature, controlling different bodies, different elements, still that is ultimately coming from the benediction of the Lord. And of course, as mentioned before, Lord Shiva being the greatest yogi, we find that many of these mystic persons, they worship Lord Shiva with an aim or a desire to actually attain perfection in that yoga system. However, Srila Prabhupada points out that In the purports, not Srila Prabhupada, the servants of Srila Prabhupada point out in the purports that one who actually has these mystic potencies will not challenge the supremacy of the Lord. So different yogis, sometimes we read in the past, they have challenged the supremacy of the Lord by calling themselves the supreme Yogeshwar. But a true yogi, even though practicing a mechanical system of yoga, attaining mystic perfections, does not actually challenge the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he knows where everything is coming from. He knows that ultimately the Lord is the one who is full in all opulences, and he is providing these opulences as they perform this yoga. So in one sense, of course, we understand everything is coming from Krishna. All the qualities that are in existence, material and spiritual, they are coming from Krishna. We are part and parcel of him. So everything comes accordingly. So when it says that we are coming from the body of the Lord, Mayavadis or impersonalists only accept variety in the conditioned state. In the liberated state, they do not accept that one can be an individual. Of course, from Srila Prabhupada's books, we understand that this is a flawed conception of understanding. Krishna himself says that we are always existing eternally in relation to him by being his servants. And the example Srila Prabhupada would often give is when a lizard or a chameleon, if any of you have ever seen a chameleon, it goes onto the tree, or any type of bird will sit on the branch of the tree and it will merge or it will camouflage with the tree because they have a similar external cover. It might be green, it might be maybe charcoal, orange, brown, etc. But the bird never loses its individuality. The lizard never loses its individuality. It still remains separate from the tree. So even after the point of liberation, the living entity does not merge eternally. So this is explained by Srila Prabhupada very clearly. So the Mayavadi conception is a perverted one, of course, thinking that the living entity separated by the coverings of Maya will eventually merge and become one with the Brahman and lose its identity. So that is a false statement, and we do not accept that. We understand that individuality exists even on the liberated platform. Individuality is not only something that exists on the conditioned state, but it is also there in the liberated platform. The second part of this very short but packed purport speaks about the different types of living entities. So there is the ever-liberated, unconditioned living beings, as well as the ever-conditioned living beings. And of these ever-conditioned living beings, we have the faithful and the infidels. And of the faithful, there's two more divisions, the devotee and the mental speculator. So in different philosophies or different schools of thought, there's this idea that when one does not follow properly, they become eternally doomed, or they eternally go to hell and burn in a fire. I will not mention which tradition that is, but we're all aware. But this is not the same, of course, in the Vedic understanding that we are not eternally doomed or condemned to suffer. Krishna himself makes available living entities, gives them an opportunity to get liberated by providing different types of knowledge, by providing different types of situations where one can get an opportunity to transgress the laws of material nature and be reinstated in their original position. So we're given a chance for liberation. It is not that we will be eternally rotting in the material world. That is not the duty of Krishna, the well-wish of every living entity. Being eternally conditioned means we have been in the material cycle for a very, very long time. The time cannot exactly be traced out, but we have been conditioned over many, many births. Therefore, we act in certain ways. So this can be changed, however, by the mercy of Krishna. This conditioned state of existence can be changed by the mercy of Krishna. And later on, this is explained as well. When Lord Brahma asks the questions after the Lord reveals to him the spiritual world, explains to him his different potencies, the Lord explains, and seeing Brahma present before him, the Lord accepted him as worthy to create living beings to be controlled as he desired, and thus being much satisfied with him, the Lord shook hands with Brahma and slightly smiling addressed him thus. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that the creation of the material world is not by accident. The living entities who are eternally conditioned, or the Nitya Bhattas, are given a chance for liberation under the guidance of the Lord's representatives like Lord Brahma. So sometimes we get told that if we do not practice properly in different traditions, that we will eternally go to hell. But Krishna, being very, very kind, he makes different opportunities for the conditioned living being to actually get a chance for liberation. So there's always opportunities, and this is why Krishna educates different personalities, that he empowers to speak this knowledge, this science of Krishna, the science of the soul. So we are not eternally doomed. The infidels, of course, in this purport, Prabhupada speaks about the conditioned souls, and then out of the ever-conditioned living beings, there's the faithful and the infidels. And the faithful, of course, those who are accepting an authorized, legitimate path, and they perform their activities based on those authorities and based on those shastras. The infidels. Infidels is a word that is used for people who do not accept any faith. It's popular with the Christian tradition. An infidel is someone who does not accept the Bible or Christ or accept anyone else related in that manner. So basically the faithless or the atheistic type of persons. This is what they are also considered as ever conditioned, the envious, the faithless type of person. And it is interesting that Srila Prabhupada explains when he further breaks down the two types of faithful persons, the devotees and the mental speculators. And I was trying to understand why the mental speculators falls under also the faithful. And my little tiny brain could only understand that perhaps the mental speculators, the gyanis, the philosophers, they are adhering to a certain section of the Vedas. Although they concoct the end result at times, they are accepting some type of authority in the scriptures. So they focus more, let's say, on Brahman realization, or they focus more on separating their gross and subtle body, not necessarily attaining perfection, but just getting out of the material suffering. So in that way, they're adhering to a certain type of system. They're adhering to a certain type of yoga that might be provided from the Vedic point of view, as the Vedas is divided into those dealing with the mode of passion, goodness, and ignorance. So certain parts are used by certain persons who are born in a particular mode. So they are also considered as faithful. And of course, the devotees are seen as being faithful because they accept Krishna as their Supreme Lord. They accept Krishna as their maintainer and their provider. So the example of Maharaj Parikshit gives us an understanding of being faithful towards the words spoken in the Bhagavatam. That Maharaj Parikshit, as a disciple, one who is disciplined, asks befitting questions. There are certain questions, of course, that one must ask the spiritual master, or one is not must ask, but it is advice for the advantage that we seek guidance from the spiritual master about spiritual subject matters, about how we can make advancement, how we can serve devotees, how we can get to know Krishna. speaking about materialistic activities or mundane subject matters are not exactly the topics that one may ask the spiritual master. The topics that we inquire from elevated souls is about elevation into Krishna consciousness. Those subject matters we are encouraged to ask. As we see here, Parikshit Maharaj is asking about everything related to Krishna, Krishna's energies, Krishna's living entities, how are they created, how are they maintained, and who is doing all of this. In this way, the majesty or the tattva of Krishna brings about in a devotee a mood of gratitude and understanding that yes, Krishna is the Ishvara and everyone else is the servant of that Ishvara. We are all meant to serve Krishna. So asking questions and answers should lead us to understand that we are meant to serve Krishna and that our life is centralized towards serving Krishna, and Krishna, of course, in his deity form, in his paraphernalia, his holy dham, his devotees, etc. So this we are encouraged to do. So the conditioned living entity exists in this world. This is another question that Maharaj Parikshit is asking. How does the conditioned living entity actually exist in this world? And later on, there's a verse in the next chapter explaining how the living entity is enjoying the modes of material nature under the misconceptions of I and mine. This is the only way, actually, the only way that the living entity can live in this world is under the ignorance of I and mine. And that ignorance, of course, is provided by Krishna. Krishna's energy is so bewildering, it puts us into ignorance. So this I and mine mentality offers us varieties of ways to try to enjoy it, to try to have this utopian dream of overlordship. This is what the conditioned soul wants. It wants to enjoy and become the lord of everything that it surveys. And the material nature, of course, provides a body. It provides the field of action, field of activities. It provides all the ingredients needed for us to try to act out as if we are the master. This is how the conditioned living entity, by coming to contact with ignorance not knowing that I am part and parcel son of Krishna, the living entity starts thinking that I am master, I am the center. And deluded by the mode of ignorance, specifically, the conditioned soul acts, and that mode of ignorance produces the coverings of I and mine, which is pertaining to the external manifestation, pertaining to our body, our gender, our sex, our occupation. All of these things become tainted with I and mine mentality. So this is how the conditioned soul survives in the material world, under the ignorance of this is mine, I am the body, I am the mind, I am a woman, I am man, I am Indian, etc. And this mind propensity, my wife, my money, my bank balance, my car, that is the only way this trying to lord it over the material nature is the only way that the living entity can actually exist in this material world. It is due to ignorance. The unconditioned living entity, of course, exists while in this world by engaging in topics or engaging in activities that connect one to the Supreme. And by doing so, one actually has an opportunity for this liberation. So by hearing the message of the Supreme, by engaging in Krishna bhajan, by engaging in topics related to Krishna, the living entity exists in this world very peacefully. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, Machit matgat prana bodhayantas parasparam kathayantas chamam nityam tu santicha ramanticha, that the devotees, they congregate in the, summarizing the verse, they enliven one another in topics about Krishna, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss by conversing about Krishna in such association. So this is how the liberated living entity exists in this world of duality, that they seek out the shelter of Krishna. and associating with Krishna, as Krishna says in the Bhagavatam, that the devotee lives in his heart, and Krishna himself lives in the heart of his devotee. Krishna knows nothing but his devotee, the devotee knows nothing but Krishna. So, in the pastime of Dvarsa Muni, when Dvarsa Muni approached the Lord and asked the Lord to pacify him by removing the Sudarshan Chakra, the Lord explained that, yes, I am known to be merciful, however, the devotee has captured my heart, and my heart is with my devotee. So if indeed I need to forgive you, you have to approach my devotee because my devotee has my heart. So this is the mystical side or the transcendental side of understanding the relations of Krishna and his liberated devotees, that the liberated devotee knows no one but Krishna. Krishna knows no one but his devotees, and they reside in each other's hearts. And when one's heart is cleansed and purified by the process of devotional service, which is aided by careful hearing and chanting, it becomes easy to be peaceful in this world and move forward and sing and preach the glories of the Supreme Lord. So this is how the liberated or the unconditioned living entity functions in this world. So, another angle to the questions that are being asked by King Parikshit, especially with this point, Prabhupada speaks a lot about it in the next chapter, about how we're really not eternally conditioned, that the Lord is always making opportunities for us to get liberated. The Lord supplies everything we need on the material level. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that, okay, someone, a tiger wants to eat certain types of foodstuff. Krishna provides the opportunity. Krishna gives the body. Or a living entity wants to enjoy very luxuriously. So he gives the body of a demigod. And when one is very intelligent, Srila Prabhupada gives the example that if one is intelligent enough, he or she will desire the association of the Lord. And the association of the Lord is attained by constantly hearing and reading about the Lord. This is how we directly come into contact with the Lord. We hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, all the bona fide texts from a pure devotee, one coming in line, and hearing about the Lord's activities in its sense. It will purify the contaminations of the heart, and it will allow one to directly associate with Krishna. So by hearing constantly about Krishna, the purification of material existence actually starts happening within the heart. So one may ask, Srila Prabhupada was giving a class once in Tokyo in Japan in 1972, and the question came, how does the living entity come in contact with material nature? And of course, Srila Prabhupada, different places, answers it in a different way, but here Srila Prabhupada explains that the living entity doesn't come in contact with matter. He thinks that he has come into contact with matter because in a conditioned state, the soul is covered and the false conception or the false ego is high. So the false ego is what's interacting with the different modes of material nature. Srila Prabhupada gives the example again of a tiger. He says, just like a man dreams that there's a tiger, but there's no tiger. He's just dreaming that there's a tiger. So he says, similarly, that we think that we are matter. We think that we are gross. We think we're subtle matter, but actually we are not. Even if we take the simple example, we can have a cup of water and put oil in it. The oil will be there, but it will never mix. They will always be separated. So the living entity is encaged in this body, but it will never merge into the body, or the soul does not merge into matter. It always remains distinct. That is why when the body dies at a certain point, the soul has to leave the body and go elsewhere. It's two separate things. So with the end of the body, the soul still eternally exists. So in this way, we actually do not come into contact with material nature. We're just being driven by the material body. Just like when we have a look at that picture in Bhagavad Gita of the chariot and the horses, the mind being the reins and then the horses being the different senses, the soul being the driver of that body, the chariot, is just witnessing what is happening. So we are stuck in this body. We never merge. We never mix with matter. We always remain aloof from that. And the Lord, by His causeless mercy and the mercy of His empowered representatives, in the, even in the matter of creation, the Lord would educate Lord Brahma. He would educate, you know, Narada Muni, the four Kumaras, in these topics, in these subject matters about creation, about the living entities, about our relationship, because hearing those topics will actually remove the attachment of the mind, the attachment of the body. It will remove all of these things. So whether the four Kumaras are hearing Bhagavatam at the lower planetary systems from Anantashesh, or whether Narada Muni is hearing it from his father, or whether Lord Brahma himself is hearing it from Krishna, this knowledge is being given time and time again so that we can extricate ourselves from this conditioned state. So the more we directly come in contact with Krishna, the better chances of our purification and clearance of material contamination will happen. And how wonderfully this happens. Most people doubt how Krishna actually is in control of everything, because we say Krishna is the source of everything, he's a maintainer, everything comes from him. Some people doubt that and say, well, if God is the source of everything, why is there so much war, so much this, etc.? Of course we understand everything is coming from Krishna. This is Krishna's energy. It is inferior in nature, but it is also his energy. Lord Rama later on asked this question as well. How do we understand all these potencies that you have for creation and still remaining aloof? Srila Prabhupada gives the example of the spider and the spider's web, that the spider creates the web at any time and it can annihilate the web at any time and recreate it again. So the Supreme Lord, as he desires, he creates the material cosmos and again it gets annihilated at a certain point. So according to Krishna's desire, all these things are happening. It is inconceivable, of course, for a mundane person to understand this subject matter. This is why Srila Prabhupada always stressed that we hear from bona fide sources. Even hearing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we should hear it from those coming in disciplic succession. It should be a bona fide medium. So in summary, we have spoken about the living entity's eternality, being part and parcel of Krishna, never losing our individuality even at the point of liberation. We have our individuality right now in this conditioned state. It will eternally exist in our liberated state as well. There's different types of living entities according to their relationship with the modes of material nature, which is fueled by their desire to try to lord it over material nature. And in this way, Krishna provides different bodies so that the living entity can try and enjoy in the material world. The living entity tries to be Krishna. This is why we come to the material world. We try to be the master. And the Supreme Lord tries to arrange different ways that we can get liberated from this situation. And we should, falling onto that, this is questions, of course, posed by Maharaj Parikshit. Not that he didn't know the answers to these questions, but he's asking for the benefit of those who will come later on in Kali Yuga. For us, it might be difficult to hear strings and strings of questions, but it will lead to our clarity. And as we keep hearing from the spiritual master, keep hearing from Krishna in Bhagavatam, we become enthusiastic. Enthusiasm is very important in bhakti, and as we know, that enthusiasm means that we endeavor with intelligence, and Bhagavad Gita explains that our intelligence is sharpened when we read Shastra. So when we have a steady routine of hearing and reading Srila Prabhupada's books, our intelligence becomes strong. We perform devotional service with great endeavor, always depending on Krishna, and we'll always remain enthusiastic. Enthusiastic is not only pertaining to jumping up and down in kirtan, which is great, that is also a sign of being enthusiastic, but also enduring with intelligence. That is enthusiasm, according to the Nectar of Instruction. And with that mentality, it is very easy to live in this world in a non-conditioned state. So we learn from these great souls, Sukadev Goswami, Maharaj Parikshit, how to ask favorable questions meant for our liberation. And later on, we will get the other example of Lord Brahma, the most intelligent being, the first created being. He will also pose questions similar in nature so that he can also understand that he's not the creator, he's not the Ishvara, that he's also dependent on Krishna. And in this way, we are always kept humble with the good understanding that everything that we have, material, spiritual, it is all coming from Krishna. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comment or question. Oh, yeah, Rasa Vilasini Maharaji. Sorry, I can't hear.
If you put emulsifier in the water, will mix the water and the oil. And emulsifier is the false ego. And how we get false ego? We get false ego because we have envy.
Yes.
And because we are now here, you know, we were envy of Krishna and we wanted to enjoy it here. We wanted to have his six opulences. And now, in this position, we will not get rid of that emulsifier or the false ego until we learn to love. You know, like, it's not only loving Krishna, but we have to learn to love everyone. You can have gratitude.
Yeah, that's why Nectar of Devotion explains that Krishna doesn't just mean the person Krishna, it means the paraphernalia and his devotees. So not just, it's a Kanista mentality just to focus on me and Krishna or me and the Guru. So what you're saying, it is right. We have to learn to love Krishna and his parts and parcels. We first, and loving God, loving everyone, as Prabhupada mentioned, when we water the root of a tree, automatically we will appreciate and learn to love everyone. And the example is Prahlad Maharaj, when he offers the prayers with the residents of Jambudvip, he explains that, you know, only by the process of devotional service that the heart of the living entity becomes calm and the living entity is able to think about the well-being and the welfare of others. So the process of bhakti is watering the root and it allows the heart and the consciousness to understand that there are parts and parcels of Krishna and we are meant to also connect them through a process of Krishna consciousness. So to love everyone requires that we love Krishna. Yeah, that's why we're encouraged to avoid jiva parad, not just Vaishnava parad, but jiva parad as well. Cielo, you had a question? Yeah, I mean, just wake up in the morning and rethink where this body. We actually think, unless I look a certain way, I'm not happy. Unless I have certain things externally, I'm not happy because this is me. This is how we associate with dead matter. This is ignorance. Because we may have the knowledge and the understanding, but the realization hasn't really happened. Till we get realized knowledge, we act on it. So we can have knowledge, we can read the books, but unless we actually live the books, the realization won't come, and we'll still be stuck on the bodily platform. So when we identify too much with the body in its gross or subtle form, the body that's been given to us due to our consciousness, then we slow down our ability to actually become really liberated, to really come to the platform of devotee. So gradually reading and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, side by side practicing devotional service with enthusiasm, the realizations will come. They don't just come by us reading and sitting down, but we actually have to cultivate. Bhakti means cultivation. Nectar of devotion, nectar of instruction explains that it's like a cultivation. So we have to do things, practical things, then the realization will come that I am separate from the body. I am separate from the mind and the intelligence. Bhakti gets rid of the false ego. And in the previous verses, I think 10 verses, it mentioned how the process of devotional service is the only one that purifies the heart for good. The only one that purifies the consciousness for good. Other processes may touch on a little bit here or there, but Prabhupada says devotional service is the only one that will purify the heart for good. And that was the purport where Srila Prabhupada was stressing hearing Srimad Bhagavatam with great attention and performing devotional service side by side is very important. He said we should do this. This will give us the realization that we are separate from the body. Hope that helps. One more question, sorry. Anyone? Okay, thank you very much. Grandchild Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Shabbat Prabhupada ki. Shabbat Prabhupada ki.